Welcome back to Distinct Nostalgia by MIM.
More than a podcast.
We're turning the clock back 50 years ago this week to the start of a TV institution. Emmerdale is half a century old. And now we've a very special reunion for you. It's none other than the actors who played the iconic Matt and Dolly for many years. Freddie Pine was, of course, in Emmerdale Farm from the very beginning in October 1972. Gene Rogers joined in the early 80s. Well, we've got them both back together for a special trip down memory lane with Ashley.
So Distinct Nostalgia, and it's a Distinct Nostalgia special because it's 50 years ago that Emmerdale Farm began. I say Emmerdale Farm because that's exactly what it was at the time. And we've got two of the stalwarts from the very early years with us. We've got Freddie and we've got Gene, who played, of course, Matt, and Dolly. Frederick Pine, you were there at the very beginning, weren't you?
I was in episode one. And the first word of the series was my name, Matt.
What a claim to fame, eh? Fantastic. And did you think that you'd be talking about it now, 50 years later?
No, I don't think I did. 50 years, well, you know, 50 years ago. And that's actually more than 50 years because we started filming in June 72. It went out in October. We started working on it in June.
How did you get the parts? Remind us.
Well, I had played a Yorkshireman before for Yorkshire Television in a series called Justice, with Margaret Lockwood playing the Justice as a woman. She was a QC or something. And
they've been repeating that on Talking Pictures recently. I don't know if you've seen.
They have indeed, yeah. Not that we get any money for it, cheeky, you know what I mean. So I had done that, and then they called me up to do that. They said all the actors have got to be born and bred in Yorkshire. Well, I was born in London and brought up in Cambridgeshire during the war, so I don't know how they kept me on as a Yorkshireman, but they did. So that was how it all started. And I went for two interviews. The first one, Maureen Risco, who was the casting director, said, well, now they like you very much, but just forget about it because it might be put on the shelf and never taken up again. Then a bit later on, they called me in again for a different producer. And Kevin LaFan was there, the original author. And they cast me. So that was that. And I was quite chuffed about that.
Fantastic. And of course, it was around the time, 1972, at that particular point, there wasn't any TV in the daytime, was there? And this programme was going to be basically a daytime serial, as it were. And I think it started around the same time as things like Crown Court and things like that that were on in the afternoons.
I think General Hospital was the other one.
That's right. And were you told how long it would be initially? Was it going to be a regular serial, or was it literally going to be on for a few weeks? And
no, it was on for 6 months, I think it was, with an option for another 6 months. And how many is in 6 months?
If it's two, is it always two a week?
So however many that was, and then they said there'd be an option to do another 6 months when this, seeing how it goes, as it were. And then it kept going on and on and on, doing another year and another year and another year. So,
and you mentioned Kevin Latham, because he was the guy who created it. I gather he was asked to come up with something for Yorkshire TV, and is it right that it was loosely based on sort of them wanting to do something that was like a TV version of The Archers kind of thing?
I don't know. He had, before Emmerdale, he'd written Beryl's Lot. Do you remember Beryl's Lot? And if you look at Beryl's Lot and Emmerdale, there are lots of similarities, actually. But apparently, he told me that Donald Baverstock, who was then head of YTV, said, I want you to write a series about a farming family. He said, I don't know anything about farming. He said, well, come up and live in Yorkshire for a couple of weeks and find out. So that's how he came up with it all. Started it off with a funeral. And everybody said, you can't start a new serial with a funeral. He said, you want to bet? And that's what he did.
Yeah, I mean, I was born a month after Emmerdale began. I'm 50 this year as well, you see, so it's a big anniversary for me too. But I remember, obviously, I look back and I know there was a funeral at the beginning, and it was very, you know, it was a very serious programme, wasn't it? You know, the stories were quite gripping at times, but it started off being an extremely serious show. It was, you know, the family were very close and they all took themselves and their roles at the farm very seriously, didn't they?
Yeah. We started off with the funeral. The funeral car was at the top of a hill in the Dales. We were going to drive down to the village when we got our cue to drive down. But it was quite a time coming. So as cars went past us, we all roared with laughter, so that people think, bloody hell, they're in a funeral car and they're all laughing. What are they all laughing about? That was Fraser's idea, of course. Anyway, eventually we drove down to the village and there we are. We started the thing off.
Fantastic. And did you know any of the other cast members at the beginning?
None of them, no. Had we been rehearsing? I can't remember now if we started rehearsing before the first day of filming. I really can't remember that. I know the first night before we were filming, we all went out to Arncliffe and stayed in the local inn there. And there was lots of shenanigans going on. I don't know what the innkeepers thought, because people were running around going mad and making apple pie beds and all sorts of daft things. I don't know, however, we learned any lines for the following morning. But it was all good fun to get us all to know one another.
Fabulous. And what was your character supposed? What were you told about what Matt was going to be like and who he was and how he related to the family?
Well, it was funny actually, because I had known a couple very, very similar to Matt and Dolly in my early days when I actually worked on a real farm in Cambridgeshire, because when they said to me, what do you think about these characters? I said, I know them. I've worked with them. Obviously not Yorkshire people, but they were very, very similar types. And so they said, well, how did that come about? And I said, well, I worked on a real farm. I worked on two farms when I was 15 or so. I worked up in Cheshire. I worked on a dairy farm. I left there and went back to where I was evacuated during the war. And there I worked on an arable farm, so I had a bit of real farming experience, which is why I used to, as Jean will well remember, I used to shout at the directors if they got it wrong.
Yep.
you obviously say you got to know each other over pretty quickly. But, you know, the chemistry was there right from the very beginning, you know, in terms of that show. I think that was probably what made it successful so quickly, that they were a very believable family, you know, with a matriarch at the heart and all the rest of it. Yeah, tell us a little bit about getting to know the people and how that went.
Well, I must say, mostly we got on very well together the whole time I was in it. But when we started out, I think I might have told you this before, I thought I'd never remain in this programme because I can't stand Sheila Mercer.
Oh!
I know, is it awful?
Yeah.
I didn't get her at all. And then while we were rehearsing one day, she said, we've got the afternoon off. Do you want to come with me for a picnic in Roundy Park? So I thought, oh, God, I better go. I suppose I'll have to be polite. And from that moment on, we got on like a house on fire. And I really loved her. She was a great, wonderful character. And a very generous woman, no doubt about that. But it's very hard. You get a first impression, you think, oh, I can't stand this person. And you end up being the best of friends, which was really lovely. So that was Sheila. Fraser, of course, was joking from the very beginning. Joe Kendall, who played Peggy, the first one, we got on quite well together, except she was always chucking the scripts in the air and saying, what's all this rubbish? And they wrote her out. I heard recently that she'd gone, she left us now. Jo Kendall, I don't know if you knew that, Jean.
No.
So when you got there, the most of the characters were, you know, you got Grandad and you got Sheila and you got Amos and Mr. Wilkes. You know, you were, you and and Fraser, who played Joe, were the youngsters really at the beginning when it came to it.
Absolutely, yeah, we were. And we had to work a hell of a lot together. Whole days sometimes working on the farm and learning the lines. So, of course, it was a very small cast to begin with. So we worked really very hard in those early days, mucking out, milking and everything else. And gradually the cast got bigger and bigger and it made it a lot easier. Sometimes you'd find you were in an episode, you only got about two lines. But when we first started, God, it was really, I'm not joking, it was really hard work because we had Fraser and I did nearly all the farm work, of course. There was nobody else around. And so it was quite hard going. And also because we filmed that in Arncliffe, we had to be at the studios in Leeds at 6 o'clock in the morning and get makeup and dress and all that stuff. And then like an hour and a half's journey out to Arncliffe and again back at that. So we were earning more in overtime than we were getting in our fees, I think.
That's why they moved the village and the farm in nearer, didn't they?
Yeah, later on. Yeah, later on. When did it become clear, Freddie, that this show was making some noise and people were enjoying it and that it was likely to continue? When did you, when did you realise that, Emmerdale Farm was a thing, as it were?
Well, it became clear in Yorkshire because the Yorkshire Television decided that the Yorkshire people loved it and they put out an omnibus edition on a Thursday evening. So it had 2 half-hours during the week and then they put an hour on in the evening at about 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night. So we thought, oh, there's something going on here. In fact, one day on the headrow in Leeds, a woman said, oh, should I love watching it at night time? Must be very difficult for you, though. And I said, oh, why is that? Well, you have to go and do it all again, she said. She didn't realise it was recorded.
Well, at least you didn't have to do it. You didn't actually have to do it live like Crossroads was back in the early years, did you?
Oh, no.
You escaped that bit. In fact, Gene, we both of you were in Crossroads at some point.
I did a bit of Crossroads. Yeah.
Did you have to do live Crossroads, either of you?
I think we did. I'm not sure now. I know it might have been recorded. It's so long ago. Yeah. I wasn't in it many minutes. I had to play a reporter shouting at Noel Gordon. And I think I've only been there a few days.
Yeah. But what about you, Jean?
I'm just trying to think whether it was live or not. I know we had to be careful of the scenery. That was the main thing. It was recorded. I know why, because you had to be, if you went wrong, you had to continue because
That's right, yeah.
They said the tape or whatever it was very valuable. and they wouldn't, so you couldn't stop. You just, whatever rubbish was coming out just went on. But I was in it for about 4 or 5 months, I think it was. Yeah.
Was that in the 70s, was that, Jean?
Oh, dear. I hate looking back.
I remember Noel Gordon saying, I've been in this show for a whole year now and I have never dried once. And, of course, she always spoke like that to give herself time to think of what the next line was going to be.
No, I think it was the 60s, actually.
I think it was. Yeah.
When I was in it, sort of mid, 60s.
So maybe that, when Sue Nicholls was in it. Sue Nicholls was in the 60s, wasn't
she? Yes, she was. I don't think about Crossroads. I think about Emmerdale, but it's funny, isn't it? Dustbin brain. When you're in a soap, and Freddie will know this very well, you have a dustbin brain. You cannot keep the scripts in your head once they're finished with. If you don't throw them out, you go mad.
It's worth us mentioning Crossroads just briefly because there is about to be a big TV drama about Noel Gordon, which
has been written by
Russell T Davies, and Helena Bonham Carter is going to play Noel Gordon.
Yeah.
So that should be interesting. I think it comes out January or February next year, I think, if I remember rightly. So it's worth
Nolly, as she was known.
Nolly, that's right.
Nolly. And she was charming. She was charming and really kind. But she used to sit at the end of the rehearsal room. Do you remember, Freddie? Like a queen on her throne. The rehearsal room was quite long. And so you'd sit sort of along the sides of it with your scripts, you know. But she'd be at the end and she'd got a big chair there. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember, because I was only in, I think I was in one or maybe two episodes playing a reporter. I wasn't in it very long at all.
Yeah,
well, that's good. I didn't know how I got the part in it.
Good memories of Crossroads, but let's go back to Emmerdale then. We digress. So, Gene, all this was happening at Yorkshire in 1972. Emmerdale was emerging. Daytime TV was emerging. Obviously, you didn't come into Emmerdale till 7 or 8 years later. But did you become aware of this programme that was going on in the afternoons? Did you know about it?
Not really, because I was doing a lot of radio work. You know, I got two young children and I'd stopped doing theatre and I was doing radio more or less nonstop. And when I wasn't in a drama, I was doing Listen with Mother. And that, of course, was studio in the daytime, either a morning session, an afternoon session, or if it was a play, you'd have a whole day. So I wasn't. And it was, I think I told you about how my mother was dying of leukemia when my agent sort of got in touch and said, I've been working on this for months. And then there was the strike, wasn't there, Freddie?
Oh, yeah, electrician strike.
They were setting things up, and so my agent had heard that they were looking to recast Dolly, because Catherine Barker had played it for 3 years, I think it was. And so I didn't know anything about it until they were back in business again. And there were 50 of us that went up for it. And I remember when I got onto the shortlist going to visit my mother in hospital and sort of telling her that, you know, it looked as though I was going to be recalled. And she watched it. You know, it went out at 5:15 in the London area and the South. And I remember her looking at me and saying, yes, she said, yes, you do look like her, you know, like Catherine Barker. And my mother loved the programme. And I think for a lot of people who were in difficult situations, there was something comforting about Emmerdale Farm, that kind of the seasons, the way in which things come round again, and however awful it is. And Freddie always used to say to me that, you know, graveyard in the village is absolutely bursting with people, because in the 7.5 years before I joined, there'd been quite a lot of murders, hadn't there, Freddie?
I don't remember that, maybe.
People dying, which continued, because it makes me laugh sometimes when people say, oh, it's all, you know, mayhem. It's just that the mayhem happens very regularly, whereas it took a bit more time, I think, on Emmerdale. But there was some pretty, you know, bad things happening in the village along the way.
Yeah, absolutely.
And of course, you remember that better than I do. Now I think it's all murder and explosions and rape and God knows what else. Not quite like that in those days. It was more rural thing.
Yeah, but it took time, I think. I mean, yeah. My character was kidnapped. Don't you remember when Ted Sharp took Dolly off to his cottage and tied her to the bed?
Did he have his way with her? I don't remember any of that.
No, I don't think he did, but the you know, the sort of picture of you in the... you know, sort of you and Joe coming out to sort of find where she was. And then the other one where I think I was stuck in a barn with a mad, savage dog outside.
Oh, my God.
Remember that one?
I don't remember any of that. All wiped from my mind. Mind you, it's 1989 when I left it. So that's a hell of a long time ago, 30 years ago or something.
Let's go back again to the early years, because I think that listeners more than anything will be interested in knowing a bit more about what it was like at the time. So, you know, at that particular time, we got Coronation Street, there was Crossroads, which were both of them were huge, were big. In fact, Crossroads often beat Coronation Street in the ratings. People forget that, but it did, didn't it, at different times. Yeah. There was no EastEnders. Emmerdale was emerging, but it wasn't as big as it became in terms of viewing figures, kind of thing. But you were your own stars of daytime, because there wasn't much on in the daytime. So this was a new thing in a way. How did it change your life at that time, Fred? You and say Fraser, you know, did you have a wild time away from the filming?
Well, to be quite honest, there wasn't much time for a wild time because we had a hell of a lot of learning to do, reading scripts, learning lines. And then, especially Fraser and I, were out on the farm when it was filming days, working all day long. So you'd go home exhausted and try and learn the lines for the next day, you know. So it wasn't a lot of flying around and being naughty at all. Not even for Fraser, I don't think, let alone me. I was a bit older than Fraser, so I can't remember any of that, really. We had lots of laughs and giggles, but not kind of pubbing or clubbing or any of that kind of thing. And a little bit later on, as it went on, you got a little bit easier because the cast got bigger and bigger and you had more time free. But at the very beginning, as I said earlier, it was very, very hard going. And of course, Emmerdale was on, and so was Crown Court, and so was General Hospital. But those two left, they just finished, and Emmerdale kept going because it was obviously more popular than the others, I suppose.
Yeah, Crown Court did last into the 80s.
Yes.
It was quite, and of course, a lot of people cut their teeth on Crown Court, didn't they? It became a bit like the Doctors or the Bill of its day, really, in a way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so the Crown Court's 50 years old this year as well. And that was that's interesting because I discovered the reason they called it Crown Court was because that's when they just brought in the new Crown Courts, because before that it was Assizes, wasn't it? Courts were called Assizes and things like that.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
So they just reflecting how things were changing, I suppose, and that. So it's quite interesting. It's intriguing. And one thing we touched on last time when we interviewed, of course, but I think it's worth mentioning as well, again, is, you know, we've had this revival of things like All Creatures Great and Small and whatever, we know that in the early years when they did that, they had to do everything for real, as it were. And that was exactly the same for Emmerdale, wasn't it?
Yes, absolutely. So you couldn't fake anything on there, because if you're filming something on a proper movie, you could do all sorts of things to fake what you're actually doing. But on Emmerdale, you just had to get on with it and do it, because it was television, and it was fast television as well.
And it was exhausting. Do you remember when we did the sheep dipping?
Oh, God,
I mean, I've never been so exhausted in my life. You were at the end getting the sheep out of the dip, I seem to think.
Yeah,
and
probably.
As they were fed in, I had this broom and I had to hold the sheep down.
Under the water,
Under the water. And, I mean, I'm not exactly the biggest of people. And, oh, God. And how long? We were on that scene for a good hour or so.
Oh, probably more, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's one of those sheep dipping scenes when Leslie Manville joined the cast.
Oh, right. That was before me, I think. Yeah.
Now she's a big star in films.
Yeah, she is.
From the outset, Matt had quite a turbulent storyline, didn't he? It was a lot of, you know, Matt didn't have a lot to smile about a lot of the time from the very beginning, did he?
No.
He
was... my first wife died. I can't remember what killed her off now.
I thought there was a car crash with the twins.
She'd gone before that. No, she'd gone before that. And then we still had the twins, and Aunt Beattie came into the story. Oh. And they sent Aunt Beattie off with the twins shopping one day. And she got stuck on a railway crossing and the train came and smashed them all to pieces. Robert Cardona said, "I'm going to get rid of those brats. They're always crying in the studio." So that's how they went. Then I got the news. I was out in the middle of a field when somebody came and told me they were all gone up to heaven or where they were going. I can't remember. And I had to do a crying scene. They kept on doing it over and over again. And even the head cameraman said, "Well, what about, you haven't given," the director said, "can we just do that again?" And I'd end up really properly crying. And the chief cameraman said, "Well, you're not being very fair to the artist. Can he keep on doing this?" So I said, "Well, I can if you give me a minute to think about it." But I was out in the middle of a field. I got the message to go into this big scene about being killed off. So that was that. And then I was left alone until Dolly came into the... She came in as a barmaid, didn't she, at the beginning?
Yeah, I think she did.
Yeah, Catherine Barker.
With Amos and Wilkes, yeah.
That's right, yeah. Well, it's so long ago. It's very difficult to remember some of it at all.
Well, we'll test your memory in a moment.
Because
some questions about what you remember. Go on, Jean, were you saying something?
Because Catherine married you, as it were.
Dolly married you.
And I came in after Dolly had had a stillbirth, because I think that was the idea that she would go off to recuperate in a rest home or whatever for a few months, so that when she came out, she wasn't quite herself.
No, Fraser had this idea. He said, when Dolly comes back, she should have her face all in bandages and then just take one bandage off a week so that she's gradually revealed as a new Dolly. That was Fraser's typical gagging.
But Jean, there was a similarity between the two of you, actually. Your mum was right. There is a similarity. When you look back at the old pictures, they've done very well, actually, at managing to find somebody who looked very similar.
But there were 50 of us up for the part, which quite intrigues me. You know, there were, 49 people that looked like Catherine or whatever. But, yes, when I did arrive, I was given all these videos of episodes so that I could study her. And I remember looking at it and thinking, I could play her. But the thing was, how do you proceed with that? That's fine while I'm encountering the things that Catherine had encountered, so that I could say, now I wonder how Catherine would play this, so that there. But when you come to a part in a script where she didn't, then I've got to go off and just imagine how. But it would be far too complicated. And I think eventually I thought, well, it's like being given the part of Ophelia, really. You know, many people have played it over the years, and it doesn't mean that the character isn't there, but it's for you as the artist to find the character somewhere.
You have to do your own thing, yeah. Do you remember the first day you were out filming?
On the farm, wasn't I? Go on.
You don't remember when they got to about 5 minutes to one and said, we're going straight for a take without any rehearsals?
You got out of the car?
I think you were up in the field. You'd come up there to see me to tell me lunch was ready or something. And they said... They'd mucked about all morning long, and they said, right, we're now going, we'll go straight for a take on this. And I said, no, we won't. This is Jean's first day out filming, and we're going to rehearse before we go for a take.
Oh, I remember you doing that. Yeah.
And the floor man said, no, right, here we go. 3, 2, 1, take. I said, no, we're not going for a take. We are going to rehearse before we do this. And Led Lurcock was in the scanner, and I went up to the face right up to the camera and said, we're not going to do this before we rehearse, with a few four-letter words thrown in as well.
But you did. You were wonderful, honestly, Freddie. I'm sure I've told you before, and I certainly wanted to say it today. You really did look after me, and, I was eternally grateful for that. And there were many times when you lost your rag on my behalf.
That was definitely the first. I'm sure it was the first day you were actually out filming in the fields. And I was so mad because they bucked about all morning long, taking their time on this, that, and the other. And then at 5 to 1, said, right, we won't rehearse this. We'll go straight for a take. Well, it's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous.
Yeah.
So we did.
That is and was television then. Well, it is now, because you think. I mean, Emmerdale's going out, 4 or 5 times a week? I mean, the scripts must be endless. And a lot of it has to be just, winged. And so it was good grounding for me, wasn't it? Because it wasn't just in my early days that they would do it like that. Often you'd hang about in the studio or on location and never get to it, and then last minute do it.
Yeah.
With somebody, an artist who'd come in to play a part, who you'd never met if you were out on location until that morning when you're sitting in the Winnebago with them. You know.
Again, we mentioned it in our individual interviews, I remember, Riley, about the fact that soaps or serials, I like to call them drama serials, actually, rather than soap. That's what they used to be called. You'd get the TV annual every year and you'd say TV drama serials. I've never said soap. I don't know when they started calling them soaps, but anyway.
Do you know why the soap came about?
It's something to do with America, I suppose.
It's America because the soap companies used to sponsor them. Yeah. And they called them soap operas.
That's right. So I remember getting the ITV IBA annual every year, even into the mid-80s as a kid, and it would always say drama serials, and it had Emmett and Ellen Crossroads and Coronation. But the significance was of Dolly changing actor was quite important, wasn't it? Because this didn't often happen in television. It did happen a bit in America, I think, but not that much in Britain. So it was
Miss Ellie.
Miss Ellie. It didn't happen in the UK. So what was your, do you remember what you thought about it at the time, Freddie, that actually they were bringing in a new actor to play your partner in the show? Did you, what was your thinking about it at the time? What was your reaction to that?
I don't honestly remember. I think I just thought, we'll take it in a stride, you know, just get on with it. I mean, I remember the bit with Fraser making this big joke about when she comes back, she should all be bandaged up. Take one bandage off per episode. So we see this slightly different Dolly. But apart from that, I can't, because I was at least one of the auditions when they were, when Jean was picked, I went with the producer. There was Michael Glean, and who else was it, Jean? Can you remember? Was Kevin there, maybe?
No. Kevin LaFan. And was Anne Gibson there? No, Mike. Yeah, Michael was there.
Michael Glynn was definitely there.
Yes. But there were six of us because you came in at the stage of there being six who were on the shortlist. And I think you read with all of us.
I think I did, yeah.
Yes. Well, I remember you read with me anyway. And then I had a third interview, which was with David... who was the drama, head of drama? David.
David Reynolds?
No.
David, do you mean script editor? David.
No, he was actually the head of, and he was the one who really rated Emmerdale, and he saw it as a drama series. Keith Richardson took over and saw it more as a soap.
Oh, David Cunliffe.
Cunliffe, that's right. Yeah. And I had an interview with him. I think he just had to make sure that he agreed, but it was me. So, yeah.
So the first day came and as you say, you found out that Freddie had definitely got your back and was going to look after you, as it were. What was it like in the very early? Because obviously, you were playing an established character, Gene, and Freddie, you were having to deal with some, I know you're all actors and that's the job. I know that. But, you know, this is not, it's not any old job, is it? In the sense that, you know, in a long-running drama serial or soap, you're stuck with these people.
Yeah.
Whatever, aren't you? You know what I mean? How do you think, can you recall what those early days were like as playing, because you were, and Emmerdale was very intimate in the sense that you were, there weren't many actors in the programme at all.
No.
And so you're having to do a lot of scenes with each other. You know, can you recall what was that like in the early years together?
Gene, did your first scenes take part in the studio or was it out on location? Can you remember?
I think I was out on location. And certainly I was brought up to Yorkshire for a good week, maybe 2 weeks, because I went out on location and watched what was happening there from the beginning of the week. And then on the Friday, or maybe the beginning of the next week, I saw you in rehearsals. I know I went to one of the rehearsals. Maybe it was on the Friday I went to the studio. And then the next week on the Monday, I went and watched people out on location. So I saw it from a distance, as it were.
Yeah.
And got the idea. And I think my first... first seen, well, the first picture I had of the farm was of the crew sweeping the snow off the roof of the farmhouse. Because if you remember, we were filming a couple of months ahead.
Yeah, we had to change it for the season, didn't we?
We did.
But the main thing I remember was your, I'm sure it was your first day on location when they said we're going straight for a take, and I blew my top about it. So you can't expect somebody to come in the show and then go without any rehearsal. It was ridiculous, absolutely crackpot. Anyway.
Well, I tell you, one of the things that really surprised me was that when you were on location, there was this one caravan where you were all in the caravan, whether you were a man or a woman.
Oh, I don't remember that. I thought we had two caravans.
No, you did eventually, but it was all very, very cozy to begin with.
I think you may be right, yeah, because the dresser used to throw Sheila her clothes. Come on, Sheila, get this on. Get this on. Come on, Sheila. I know you're in a hurry to get home. Come on, Sheila.
And I remember the tea time. We were always being fed. We were always being fed all this stuff at breakfast. I mean, we needed
all that bacon butties.
Because it was cold. I mean, it was cold. And you were being all wrapped up and you had these hand warmers and thermal vests. That was part of the costume. And then you'd go out to do the scene and everything would come off. You'd be standing there in the field, you know, apart from Sheila, because Sheila really wrapped herself up like a Michelin man. She wasn't going to get cold, but I thought, well, you know, farmers don't really, do they?
They're used to it. They just get up and do it.
And if you go out to hang some washing on the line, I couldn't see Dolly putting clothes on, you know, extra. But it was very cold up there in the Yorkshire. Well, Yorkshire farmland.
Yeah. Well, you became, as people use this phrase a lot, the iconic. But actually, at that period of time in television, there weren't, you know, when you think of couples, and bear in mind, nobody stays in a couple at all these days. They've been affairs all over the place, aren't they? Nobody. But actually, Matt and Dolly were a thing. I mean, I know that things changed later on, towards the end kind of thing. But Matt and Dolly were a stable couple on television.
Yeah. And everyone knew very few, I think.
Yeah, everyone knew who Matt and Dolly were, and they still know who Matt. You've mentioned Matt and Dolly; they remember you two. So, what did that? You know, over time, obviously, as the show became more popular and people, you know, was that reflected back at you from the public? Did people, Gene, did people talk to you about Matt and Dolly and about how their relationship and, you know, that kind of thing?
I think particularly once Sam came, don't you, Freddie? Became a family unit as well. And we were quite revolutionary, actually, in the way we helped introduce the baby. Because if you remember Anne Gibbons sitting us down and telling us that they were deciding that they were going to give Matt and Dolly a baby, and she looked at you because you had really climbed up the wall, hadn't you, over the twins, because if one twin was all right, the other one would set it off because they'd be crying. So, and you thought, well, with two babies, how can you do it? But we made it work because of Sue, Ben's mother, Ben.
Oh, yeah.
But again, do you remember when we went for the audition for the baby and we saw three babies? Do you remember any of that?
I don't remember that at all. I remember little Ben because he was a good little kid, lovely little kid. He wasn't any problem, was he, really, in the studio, as I remember.
But the thing was that the audition gave us the clue because we saw these three babies and one of them had quite a profound, quite a big nose.
Oh, God. How can you remember things?
I can remember it because you pointed it out.
That's probably because I've got a big nose.
No, but you thought, well, gosh, if it's that size now, what will it be like? So we were able to give our thoughts on which baby, but the one that really impressed us was that Sue came in to talk to us, and she hadn't got the baby with her. The baby was being handed round the secretaries in the office, and then she went and brought it back in. And we remarked to each other, this mother's not going to be, you know, forever, where's my treasure, what are you doing, and all that kind of thing.
She was very good.
She was, and I was able to say to her, would it be possible, Sue, if you bring the baby to my dressing room and I'll bring him into the studio, and then you can hide behind the monitor. And she was quite happy to do that. She didn't have that angst. And so therefore, Ben grew up calling me mama, her mummy or whatever, and he called you daddy, didn't he?
Yeah.
You know, and he used to say, oh, when she talked about grandma, he'd say, grandma from the farm. So he knew in his mind absolutely that they were two separate entities. And he was you just gave him toys to play with. And I always had his little mug of orange juice or whatever to hand to give to him if he, you know. We worked with him, didn't we?
I don't remember him ever being much of a problem to work with. He was always a good little boy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose he's about 40 now.
Well, he will be because he's as old as my stepson. The same year they were born. Yeah, must be 40. God. Terrible thought.
the years. So was there anything of Freddie in Matt or Matt in Freddie? Freddie?
Oh, God, that's a funny question. I'm quite a placid person, but I don't think I'm quite as placid as Matt, because I can blow my top quite easily from time to time.
And I did
as Freddie, but not as Matt, because Matt was always very, very calm and cool and collected, wasn't he? I don't think he ever really had a big row, except when Dolly went off and started off an affair with the woodcutter man. What was his name?
Steve.
No, he didn't. Actually, he didn't even blow his top then. He just ended in tears, didn't he, Matt?
He was upset. Yeah. I mean, the only time he lost his rag, really, was with Molan, wasn't he?
Yes.
Molan was being very rude to Dolly.
He was being bad to you, and then I caught him trying to steal some of our sheep.
Yeah.
And then we had the big fight with the Land Rover rolling down the hill.
Yes.
And then he ended up in the ditch. And I was charged with murder to start with.
My Matt. He's not a murderer.
Well, I always remember you saying that Matt was placid. Yeah, I think he was. But he was pretty, even though he's placid, he was quite firm with everybody. You always knew where Matt stood, didn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah,
you know, he was sort of he was the stalwart of the farm, whereas the brothers might have been a bit wayward in their different ways. Matt was the one that Annie could always trust, wasn't he? Really,
that's right. Yeah.
Salt of the earth—that's how we always used to describe Matt.
And she definitely saw him as her son, didn't she? She in that
oh,
way.
Oh yeah,
in
way. Yeah.
You know.
She was very upset. Annie was very upset when Matt left the program. Very upset. Yeah. I went to work on a farm in Norfolk. Mm. And presumably, I'm still there unless Matt has popped his clogs by now.
I doubt if he's up on the hillside, though. Would he be? He might be.
And I don't think he's working anymore because he must be as old as me.
Well, this brings us to a couple of questions I wanted to ask you both about your characters. You're talking about how old he was. What year do you think he was supposed to have been born in, Matt?
Wow. I don't know.
Do you think you were playing somebody older or younger than yourself?
Do you know, I never thought about that at all. I've never given that a thought.
Well, interestingly, he was born in 1948.
Was he? Oh, yeah. Well, he was 12 yeah. years younger than me.
So where did you get that from?
This is from the Emmerdale Wiki, apparently, which gives you all information of all the...
Which isn't always accurate.
Well, it might not always be accurate, but yeah.
People can answer it, can't they?
Yeah, absolutely. But apparently, according to this, it's 1948. And Dolly, what was Dolly's name before she was a Skilbeck?
Augusta.
Oh, I remember.
Very
that,
good.
Yeah.
Very good. And which part of the country was she from?
Oh, she was from the east up.
Northeast way, yeah. That's right. That's right. Very good. Very good. And according to this, how many episodes, Freddie, do you think you were in?
Oh, God alone knows, and he won't tell us.
Go on, answer the guess. Over how many years was it? About 17 years, was it altogether?
17 years altogether, yeah. Wow, God. 500?
Well, wasn't Emmerdale, didn't Emmerdale celebrate its 600th in 1980?
Yeah, my first year.
Yeah, so 600 to 1980, so... And you were there for another 9 years on top of that.
Oh, wow. So it must be more like 1,200, 11 or 1,200.
According to this, 1361, 1,361 apparently you were in.
I'm going to write that down so I remember it.
If it's true, as Jean says, you can never tell whether these things are completely
I'm sure that sort of thing is, because that is easily verified.
Yeah, of course it is. But other things that aren't always, are they, unfortunately?
No.
And let's have a look at another question for you then. So, and do you know what your mother was called? Do you know your mother's first name? Jean?
No.
Phyllis.
Lovely.
Oh, was it? Yeah. Phyllis.
Did Jean Bowe play your mother? Was it Jean Bowe?
No. Oh, the lovely, I had her, Kathleen Helm.
Oh, that's right, yeah. She's quite a small woman, wasn't she?
Yes, yeah. And I'd worked with her in radio. She did a lot of radio plays and so on. Yeah, she was. And of course, she came from the Northeast.
Yes, she did.
That wonderful accent. And I know when I took over the part, I said, you know, well, would you like me to do that? You know, because I was used to doing quite a lot of different accents through my work on radio. No, Anne Gibbons said, no, we're making it more Yorkshire.
Okay, which is interesting, isn't it? Because Emmerdale in more recent times has started to have a lot more actors in it from, or certain characters, from the Northeast. If you watch it now, there's quite a few people are in it from the Northeast, yeah. They seem to blend the two, because I think they think that if you're in the Dales, there will be a mixture of people from Yorkshire and possibly people from the Northeast as well, you know. So that's interesting. And then just another question. What year did Matt and Dolly get married?
Oh, that was with Catherine.
Yeah, it was. So would that be 78?
It was 29th of June, 1978.
Wow, Jean, you've got a better memory than I. But then I'm older than you are, so I've got a good excuse.
And do you remember, Freddie, whether it was a, you know, because obviously usually weddings in soaps and drama series are a big thing, aren't they? Was it a big thing, a big TV wedding?
Oh, yeah, it was quite a big thing. The church was full. I'm not sure how many weddings fill a church nowadays, but in that time, the church was full for the wedding.
Was it meant to have been done at, Mr. Hinton overseeing it, was he?
Yes, I think it was.
Yeah. I know that was a tiny little church in Esholt, wasn't it? It was a tiny little church, remember rightly, in the real village. Going way back, I remember walking around it when I went to the visit. It was a tiny little church there.
More about it than I do.
<Can't really laughs> do you don't remember filming in there then? No.
I remember the filming of the wedding, but I can't remember where it was.
Right, okay. One thing
I do remember was the lights were shining in my eyes, and it made my eye a bit watery. And everybody afterwards said, "Oh, it was so wonderful because you were nearly crying at your wedding."
I know Dolly had a big hat. I've seen the
Oh, Catherine Barker. Yeah, I've got a picture of that somewhere in my collection.
Yeah, I remember seeing that photo, yeah. But I think we used, because also the christenings, which Hugh as Reverend Hinton took for when Sam was christened. And I think we used a bigger church as the location for that.
Yeah, I don't think you'd be able to get many people in that little one in Neshalt, to be honest. So what, you know, as it went on, and obviously the cast got bigger, and I remember the 10th anniversary being a big thing. I remember there's pullouts in all the different papers and magazines about 10 years of Emmerdale. So it's obviously making a thing by that, you know, that point. People were talking about it a lot more. Did it lose something when you started to get a bigger cast, do you think? I mean, I know when we say bigger cast, it's not like it is now, huge like all of them. But, you know, you started to get more people into the show. Did that sort of intimacy between the actors sort of, did it alter things in any way, do you think?
I don't think so, not as I remember anyway, because the family, the Skilbeck-Sugden family, was still quite close-knit at that time. And there was Mr. Wilkes and Amos and all that. And they were separate. They weren't part of the family. So I don't remember that. I don't know if we had that. Well, I know we had a bigger cast, but I don't think we had anything like the cast they have nowadays.
I think it changed a bit when we had a few more of the youngsters in, possibly. But I know when I joined, I mean, they were all so welcoming. I couldn't have been happier. I really couldn't. I was sort of embraced. And I remember Toke Townley saying to me, because he played Grandad, after I'd been in the show a couple of months or so, and he said, "Sheila approves of you." So I said, oh good. I didn't realize, you know, that was you know, what had to happen, as it were. But yeah. Sheila was just wonderful. You talked about Sheila. She had this kind of terribly grand look about her, and she would be, you know, she called a spade a shovel, didn't she? I mean, that was a very Yorkshire thing about her. But she also came from a family where she talked about mummy and daddy.
Oh, yeah.
Because it was a big grand house. And, of course, her family, the Rickses, they owned petrol stations, didn't they, and so on.
I think they were in shipping as well originally, the Rickses.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So she was quite a mixture of these two ways of thinking and behaving. And she didn't suffer fools gladly at all, and as Freddie said, she used to underdress, you know. I mean, we were all sort of careful because of her knees, and she had these various operations. But my God, at the end of the filming, she would be out of that Winnebago, ready for the taxi.
Yes, when she drove herself, she used to. On location, she used to crawl down the field to get to the location. But at the end of the day, she was up that field like a bloody shot out of a gun.
It was years and years of being in the theatre, of course, in the Whitehall farces, and, you know, sort of night after night on stage, and then underdressing for the curtain call so that you could be off back home. Yes, but she was wonderful. She had a heart of gold, as you say.
Absolutely. I remember one thing she said, and I told a friend of mine recently, and he thought it was marvellous, and I must remember that if anybody was in her way, she was trying to cross a road or get across the room or anything, she wouldn't say, "Excuse me, you're in my way." She'd say, "Excuse me, am I in your way?" She put it the other way around.
Yeah, she tested my driving, because she lived down in sort of near Shepperton where I lived. She was in Sunbury, and So she said, can I have a lift down? I said, yeah, of course, and I'll drop you off. I know exactly whereabouts you are. And I did that, and she decided my driving was all right. So so she would come back after the studios in particular. And I've got a couple of stories, but I cannot tell them. I can only tell them quietly to people. Yeah.
Well, I can tell you one story. When her car was being repaired, she didn't have a car. She said, can you pick me up? And I went round to her house and picked her up. And I started to drive off the way I always went to the studio. She said, I don't go this way. And so I had to go her way, a different way. And at the end of the day, I started to drive her back the way she'd brought me there. She said, I don't go home this way. We had to go home a different way.
Yeah.
So you think new people coming into the show, a bit like Noel Gordon or maybe even, you know, Violet Carson or whatever in Coronation Street, do you think younger actors coming into it probably felt a bit, you know, or a bit intimidated by her? Was there a presence? Did she have a presence about it, do you think?
I don't know.
I know we used to hear stories about the street where certain people had their chair and nobody else could sit in it. There was never any of that in Edinburgh, never, ever. It was just everybody mucked in together, and that was what was good about it. I've always said it was a good company to work with, and Yorkshire Television was a good company to work for, as far as I was concerned.
Yeah. But don't you think that was because most of you, and I always look on you lot as, you know, the beginnings of it, and you were the ones that made that company work, the family, and we kind of came into it. But all of you had theatre backgrounds, and in theatre, it's very much a company, and you're together, you have a green room, you have your dressing rooms, you share in that sort of way. And I think that is what gave that feeling of a company, as you were. And even though I said about the youngsters, the only thing was that they had a different sort of mindset, because they didn't have any responsibilities, and they many of them, after they'd finished work and it'd be late, they'd be off clubbing in Leeds, because Leeds was getting really quite vibrant, wasn't it, as time went
on. Oh, yeah.
And then they'd arrive in the morning, a little bit the worse for wear. I'm not going to name any names. And it was us. I can remember so many times on location doing a scene where I was almost saying the words if I was opposite one of the young men. That sounds sexist, but
the young women never went clubbing, of course.
Yeah, but maybe I didn't have many scenes with them. I don't know. It was just a different way, a different mindset. But I still think we were a really good company.
There was a stipulation on the first castings. First of all, they wanted people who were born and bred in Yorkshire, which they didn't get, because Tote wasn't, I wasn't, Arthur Pantelow wasn't. No. And the other stipulation was they wanted people who worked in the theatre.
Oh, really?
Yeah, definitely. They wanted theatre actors to be in the first cast, definitely.
Yeah.
Well, Gene and Freddie, stay with us. We've got plenty more to talk about as we continue to celebrate 50 years of Emmerdale and look back at all those memories. But first of all, we're just going to remind listeners of another special that we've got coming up, linked to an old ITV favourite, which we've already mentioned during this interview.
It burst onto our screens 50 years ago this year. And for a generation of kids, it became must viewing when you were sent home from school in the afternoons.
It was played like a court, wasn't it?
Absolutely. And you didn't know what the outcome was going to be because, you know, so they were ready to film two different endings, whatever the jury decision was, which was almost a bit like live television. It was great. It was edgy.
We're talking, of course, about the groundbreaking Crown Court. Filmed at Granada Television in Manchester, the show was unique. and saw some big names cut their teeth over its long run on ITV.
It was an afternoon programme, and although it was an afternoon programme, they had some very fine actors in it because there were good chances to show your mettle if you're an actor, because there were long tranches of dialogue between judges and advocates and indeed actors.
It also had an iconic theme tune that became the B-side to the A-side of Van der Valk, which went on to top the charts. We'll also be talking to the man behind that theme.
Various bits of music were played, and I think I was sitting in on the session helping choose the music, and he said, we've just done that album with you, with that piece Distant Hills. That might be right. I thought, well, I don't know, it doesn't sound right to me. But anyway, we dug it out and played it to them, and they said, yeah, that's it. Thank you very much.
That's all to come when we're back in The Crown Court, a special documentary coming soon only on Distinct Nostalgia. And if you'd like to share your memories of the show, please email us at info@madeinmanchester.tv or message us on our Twitter page at Distinct by MIM.
Now, as we're celebrating 50 years, and people listening to this, as I said, I think at the beginning, that there's going to be a lot of celebration about the 50 years, but we might have a huge amount of celebration of the farm bit of Emmerdale Farm. And those first 15 to 20 years, about 1988 when it became Emmerdale, wasn't it? But
yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. 87, 88, around that time. But before that, of course, the stalwarts of the show were people like Annie, but also the old double act at the pub, which was Amos and Mr. Wilkes. And I've watched some of the episodes recently going back, and they could have had their own show. They were hilarious, those two.
Oh, yeah.
Like a real old married couple, weren't they? Fantastic.
They were, definitely.
Well, tell us a little bit. I mean, I gather they were a bit like that in real life, weren't they? Is that right? People tell me they were a little bit like that in a way, together as a...
They always used to sit together and do the Times crossword together. I know that. But I think in real life, they were quite different in many ways. I mean, just trying to think now.
Yeah, I mean, they sat together because all their scenes were together, and then, like you do in the theatre, you go and mutter you go and mutter with the person that you're doing the scene with, so that you can get those wretched words into your head, and then you can start working properly. But no, they're different backgrounds, because Arthur was really a family man, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Arthur had been in a football thing on BBC. There's some football bi-weekly series.
Right.
And I can't remember what it was called now, but I know he'd been... I don't think Ronnie had done that much television, because he'd been one of the directors of Nottingham Playhouse at one point. But he'd done a lot of theatre. And Judy Dench used to say, oh, yes, we all used to call him Humpty. When I reminded him of Humpty, he wasn't very pleased.
No, but they work really well together because of the contrast, and that was incredible, wasn't it?
They were totally dear. I mean, how Mr. Wilkes put up with Amos, we'll never know, or vice versa, but they did somehow. And Amos was always going on about this stuff, you know, my brochures and all that kind of nonsense.
But that was the genius of Kevin Le Fan, wasn't it?
Definitely. I don't think they were meant, when, from the very beginning, they weren't meant to be together like that at all, because Mr. Wilkes came in as a landowner, owning other property near the farm, the very, very first episode, because that's when Peggy said, Matt, do you know those people up at whatever the farm was? And that was Mr. Wilkes and his daughter, played by Gail Harrison. But eventually they got running the pub together, and that's how they became almost like the odd couple, really.
Yeah, but Kevin was still writing all that.
Oh yes.
Yeah.
And Amos never ever called Mr. Wilkes Henry. He always called him Mr. Wilkes throughout, as far as I remember.
Well, I know people like that myself. You know, even somebody my age, I remember people, you know, way back, you know, as growing up, but people would call, or I'd call so-and-so round the corner, Mr. So-and-so, Mr. You never call them by the first name, very rarely, yeah. You know what I mean? There's a form of respect, wasn't it, of some kind, yeah. You know what I mean?
Yes. It's
quite interesting how that's changed now, isn't it, a little bit? Oh, yeah. Although, actually, bizarrely, I remember calling my mum by her first name in the first couple of years of my life. Yeah, I would call her Pam.
Really?
Yeah, and then eventually I started calling her mum. But, yeah, she used to... I remember conversations with my grandma where we'd talk about and you'd say, oh, you call your mum Pam. And I don't know why that was. Maybe it's because that's the word. That's what I heard a lot of my dad saying Pam or somebody else saying Pam. And then you end up calling him Pam, you know. Bizarre, isn't it? What about we've talked about this before, but I think it's worth mentioning again, is that, you know, the other great thing about Emmerdale was, as well as the realism of the acting and the scenarios and what was going on in the farming and all the rest of it, you also had, which I don't think is quite the same now, actually, you had some sets that were very, very realistic. And, you know, I wanted to sit in that kitchen and eat around that table because it was beautiful. It was a fantastic place. You know, thought, you know, those Argas and all the rest of it. Now you watch it, it looks a bit plastic these days for me.
Oh, really?
The lighting's not quite right or whatever. But yeah, I mean, obviously they were smaller, weren't they, than reality and all the rest of it. But you must have got quite attached to those sets, particularly Eugene, to your kitchen sink, of course, because you were always there washing up at the kitchen sink. But just was there anything interesting to say about those sets and how quirky they were, or things you had to make? Because obviously they weren't. You not got the whole room, had you? It is always the fourth wall and all the rest of it. Yeah. Was there anything interesting about working in those studios?
Well, I think the sets were like a real home in many ways, although you said the fourth wall was out because that's where the cameras were, although one director insisted on having the fourth wall put in and change it all around. But people used to say, oh, you're all sitting around the table eating. And I said, well, that's where farmers meet. They're out working all day. And if they wanted to have a discussion about something, it's in the kitchen having their food. It's not unreal. It was absolutely realistic to be like that.
Everything was solved in that room, wasn't it? In that kitchen. That's where all the debates, all the discussions, any you know, clashes between anybody, it was always, they were brought to the kitchen to be, you know, for Annie to work out what was going on most of the time. Or
I can't remember.
Granddad to give his impression, you know.
Remember any other rooms in being seen in the farmhouse, whether it was a sitting room or a bedroom or anything. I can't remember any of them ever being seen.
There was a staircase, wasn't there? People used to go up the stairs, remember rightly. It was that bit, yeah.
No, we did. We did as time went on. Before
we had our bedroom, yeah, that's right.
We had we had a few scenes up there in the bedroom and but I seem to remember through those 10, 11 years that I was there, that we kept moving into different spaces. When I first came, it was obviously Annie's kitchen all the time. And, you know, my character was very much at the behest of Annie. It was her domain. And then I think it was decided that a woman wouldn't put up with that for as long as she had to. And then we had the other place. Was it next door? I think there was a door off the kitchen.
But that's right.
Section. And then we had upstairs there.
Didn't we move to another house in the village at one point?
Eventually.
I think we did, yeah.
But we were trying to. No, we were in the just off the kitchen, our area, because Annie used to come in to us every now and then and join us there to talk about Joe or whatever. And then Dolly wanted to move out, and then we were going to go to Crossgill.
That's right. She was always a troublemaker, that Dolly.
She wanted her own place, Lord.
I know.
Not fair. I do my best. So Crossgill was worked on by Sandy Merrick's boyfriend, and then he set it on fire by accident And that's when the rot set in, really, because all the dreams went up in smoke. And she was back in the kitchen, and then this tree fella.
What was
the tree fella fella?
We've already reunited Jean with the tree fella, haven't we? In previous episodes of Sting Nostalgia. But what was it, do you think, that Dolly saw in Matt then, Jean? What was it about Matt that kept her with him for so long?
Well, I have to kind of imagine this, don't I? Because in a way I wasn't privy to setting that up. But I think he was reliable, he was caring, he was steady. And Dolly had arrived, you know, from a different part of the country and like the village. And she was welcomed in, like I was as an actor. You know, she was welcomed in to the Subdens. And he needed somebody, didn't he? I mean, you know, he was...
Yeah, I mean, they were really kind of, for want of a better expression, simple country folk. They weren't sophisticated or anything. You never saw them watching a lot of television, for example. They never talked about going to the movies, even. So they weren't, in a way, in that world, were they?
You didn't really see Matt relaxing that much at all, actually, did you?
I tried to make him look, but he wouldn't sit down.
I don't think he did,
he fell asleep.
I don't think I ever saw Matt in the wall pack, to be honest. Did he ever go to the wall pack?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
oh, yes. Mighty Spine,
yeah.
Oh, yes, and sometimes Dolly would go with him if she wasn't behind the bar, because she continued on and off with that, as well as the play group.
So, what was Dolly's relationship like then with Amos, in terms of the... was that quite... I can't remember those scenes. Could that be quite fun, Amos and Dolly together?
No, Amos and Mr. Wilkes were fond of Dolly because they knew that, you know, again, very practical. She was a practical woman.
Yeah.
And she could be relied on in the pub.
Well, that's what I mean about the relationship you two had as characters. That's what it was. It was that stable relationship. You knew that whatever happened at 7 o'clock at night on ITV, you'd watch TV, watch the telly, and there'd be Matt and Dolly were, you know, doing their bit, you know, looking after the farm and looking after the kids and all the rest of it, and that wouldn't change, which I suppose is why it became such a shock when that must have been a huge... I mean, I know it didn't last long, but that was quite a big thing for the viewers, wasn't it, really, to deal with that?
It was. Who was the chap that used to do the darts, the comedian that used to do the darts program?
Oh, you mean Jim Bowen?
That's right. Because I remember meeting Jim Bowen after, when it came to that 6 episodes Michael Russell wrote, which is when, you know, Dolly had her brief encounter in Harrogate and so on. And there was a moment, it was the second or the third of those 6 episodes, where Stephen Fuller is trying to persuade Dolly to sort of, you know, run away with him. And she says, no, because, I mean, they hadn't got as far as anything naughty happening, but it was all kind of going on in the mind. And at the end, suddenly she obviously was going to go and see him. And Jim said to me, he said, rang up the wife. And I said, quick, watch the television. He said, that Dolly, she's going off with that fella. And it was really quite dramatic at the time. And everybody was thinking, oh, poor Matt, poor Matt.
Yeah, poor Matt.
Poor Matt. And then when the your favourite producer, Freddie, he decided that he was going to kill Stephen Fuller off. And Dolly only heard the news on the... We didn't even have a nice dramatic scene. Just heard it on the radio that someone had been killed, a tree had fallen on them in the woods or whatever. And I had this letter, a fan letter from a woman who said, she said, I watch Emmerdale when it's on, doing my ironing, she said, and I couldn't believe it. when the news came of his death, she said, "I was looking forward to seeing an episode where you made mad, passionate love, and I'm never going to watch Emmerdale again."
Really? I didn't.
I put it somewhere. I ought to dig it out, wouldn't I? She was so upset.
Now, this came in the late 80s. This wasn't long before the show started to sort of change and all the different producers and people were altering and they were changing the setup. 89, yeah. And that's when you left the show, Freddie, wasn't it, 1989 as well? Yeah. And Gene, you stayed a bit longer, didn't you? You were there for a few 91, more years. 91. So, yeah, I mean, we have to talk about this, really. That's when the show started to alter and change and, you know, the they decided they wanted to take it in a different direction and whatever. Were you collectively aware of the fact that the changes were afoot, do you think?
Oh, I was. I knew they were going to change it from Emmerdale Farm to Emmerdale before I left.
No, it was end of 86 when it changed, 86 into 87 when it changed, because EastEnders arrived in sort of 85, I think it was.
February 85, EastEnders started.
Yes, and it was the next year that they announced that they were changing it from being Emmerdale Farm to...
There was a lovely line in The Young Ones. I don't know if you've ever watched The Young Ones. Anyway, they were sitting down to watch the television one night, four or five of them, and one of them was very, very thick and stupid. He said, "I see they've changed the name of Emmerdale Farm. It's just Emmerdale now. It doesn't take you so long to read it."
And of course, the classic one is in the Royal Family. They all sit down, don't they? And they hum the Emmerdale theme. And then they switch the telly off at the end of just to hear the theme and switch it off. just thinking for another, you know, we talk about iconic programs and shows, and it is an iconic show. It's been around such a long time, whatever you think of it now or not. But it also has an iconic theme tune, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Thanks to Tony Hatch. Thanks to Tony Hatch, who, of course, did the theme tune to Crossroads and Neighbours as well.
The theme tune was brilliant. Absolute genius.
Yeah, lovely.
Perfect for that program.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely. And the credits have changed a lot over the years, of course. At the beginning, it took a long time for it to start. The credits right at the beginning were very long. It's about 2 minutes for the programme to start. And then, of course, they altered over the years. But now, you don't see any of the countryside at the beginning now. It swings to under table shots of people's legs. I don't know if you've seen it recently, but that's how it starts now, which is bizarre. I don't know why, but there you go. But I used to like seeing the rolling countryside, and because that's one of the big successes of it, isn't it? As well as the actors and the storylines, countryside is one of the big things about Emmerdale, and that's probably one of the things that keeps it going. Do you not think?
It was as much about Yorkshire itself, and the opening titles, all those rolling hills and all that was just lovely, and that's why the music was perfect for it. Yeah. I remember thinking that when we saw the very first, they showed the first four episodes, I think, before they went out to people in the village at Arncliffe in the village hall. And I remember thinking that this music is absolute genius. It's just perfect for that show. Mm-hmm. Couldn't have been better.
Absolutely.
And that's why they liked it down south, I think. I mean, people used to say, we tune into it because we just love the background, you know, the countryside to the storyline. And it was a bit like on the success of All Creatures Great and Small, wasn't it? I mean, that was a similar series that took the imagination of a lot of.
And they brought that back, and it's doing quite well again. The only thing again, which annoys me about that, is they didn't bring back the theme tune, because to me the theme tune is one of the big things about All Creatures Great and Small. It's like they brought Vandervolt back and they didn't bring the theme tune back. How can you bring Vandervolt back and not bring the theme tune back? You know what I mean? It's quite theme tunes are quite important, aren't they, actually? They're quite part of it, you know.
Creatures came back on Channel 5, didn't it? Did very well, right. Apparently. Yeah.
Yeah, it's doing very well. Yeah, Channel 5's doing very well, actually, with its drama and stuff, apparently.
I think it's a much improved channel from what it used to be.
Reinvented itself, hasn't it? Yeah. So obviously, Emmerdale changed, and you were both, you know, there as things were changing. Were either of you upset about that, or were you ready to sort of move on to other things at that point, do you think?
Well, I was definitely ready to move on, especially when I heard about the plane crash. I thought it was terrible, quite honestly. So not that long after Lockerbie, I thought this is all wrong.
Yeah, that was 92, wasn't it? That happened after I'd gone. Yeah.
Apparently, one of the directors, whose name I can't remember, told me that when the producer from...
Phil Redman
came in. He says, right, I'm going to have a plane crash and I'm going to kill him off. And then apparently at Yorkshire, they said, no, you can't do that. You can't kill five or six people off in one go. So I said, all right, well, I'll have a plane crash and I'll kill him and her and him, or whatever it was. Then he had to cut it down. But I just thought it was an awful thing. And I felt the same way about the helicopter crash, because there had been a real helicopter crash in Glasgow, and then they wrote into the series, and I just thought that was wrong.
Yeah, that was
a
pub, wasn't it?
Yeah. So unnecessary. And I thought the plane crash, however long after Lockerbie, it was wrong. I just thought it was wrong, because that was such a terrible, terrible thing to happen. And there we are, it happened, so.
What changed things for me as a fan? Because I watched Emmerdale Farm and then sort of slowly but surely started not watching it. It was the fact that the thing about Coronation Street was that it always, yes, you'd have changes, but there were core characters that were always there.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You always felt as though you're always going to see Rita and, you know, Ken and various people that were all, they were just right there, always there. And I always felt as though you needed that bit of continuity to keep, because if you don't see a programme for a while, you come back to it and you think, oh, I wonder what so-and-so's up to or whatever. And it felt to me, by getting rid of so many people, that Emmerdale was doing itself a disservice in that way, because it wouldn't have that, you wouldn't have that, you know, that connection, that continuity anymore. And now, of course, there's only Chris, isn't there, who's left from that, from a sort of, I mean, he wasn't there from the beginning, but he's been there a reasonable amount of time. And I suppose people like, you know, the guy who plays Marlon Dingle, and people, I remember them a little bit. But they don't go back to those very early years, you know. So it would be nice for them to have kept some characters who were there, you know, sort of Salt Lea's characters who were there from the beginning to connect it with that period, you know, which I think is a shame. I know things are reinvented sometimes, but you know, I presumably you sat here talking to me, and I don't think you'd be talking to me if you were suddenly about to pop up in the 50th episode or anything. But, you know, would you like Emmerdale to, you know, to contact you and get you back in there at some point? Is it something you've thought of? Would you happily go back to Emmerdale at any point?
Well, it's strange. You're talking about the change and so on. I think the problem was that the change came about because of the threat of the EastEnders,
yes,
and the way in which the ratings were becoming terribly, terribly important.
Competitive, very competitive. Yeah. At that point, yeah.
And I think, and I'm not going to name names, but I think part of the problem, particularly for Freddie, and then eventually for me, was the change of producer, really.
Yeah.
Because I know when I kind of came head to head with him over the storyline about the abortion, which just, you know, after all those years of how first Catherine and then I had built up that sort of family thing and the trying for babies and going through heaven and earth to eventually have one, whatever the pain, that it was done in such a wanton, quick fashion, because it was useful for how the producer was pushing his characters through. And it was a shame, I think, for my character, because my character actually was there with Kim Tate and the Tates, and was actually progressing. And it was really interesting to see this family that had been such a wonderful unit suddenly shocked apart. And to have seen Matt coping with that, but still carrying on as a shepherd and not having to go somewhere else to be a shepherd. Mm-hmm. And of course, Dolly took the bay, you know, the boy down to him as well. But that was a way of getting rid of my character from the show. Mm-hmm. And it needn't have happened, but
no.
You weren't happy, were you? Nobody was happy with the change of producer in that particular I'm sorry, but he wasn't very sensitive. And
I don't think so. I think it was they, in a way, they cheapened the whole thing, really, from what it had been. I remember Robert Cardona, when he was producer, he said, I'd like this programme to be, I mean, it was sound a bit pretentious, I'd like it to be like a Chekhovian drama, you know. And he said, I wouldn't mind one episode where nobody spoke any words at all, just carried on through. You just saw them working or whatever they were doing, and without any dialogue, because sometimes the dialogue was, it did sort of get in the way in a way, you know what I mean? But anyway, that didn't happen.
Yeah. It's like when my husband, you know, Phil, who's was a location manager, first assistant, and he was looking for somewhere in the Yorkshire, and he stopped the car and he said to this guy, he said, do you know where so-and-so is? And he said, aye. And he walked on. that's very kind of that Yorkshire thing. And it speaks volumes, doesn't it?
No, absolutely. Well, you know, it's still going strong. And you love it or hate it and whatever you think about it. You know, those of us who are from Yorkshire, I'm from Yorkshire, we still think of it as...
Yes.
As our soap, really, at the end of the day.
Even
though it annoys me sometimes, I watch it and I think, oh, it's not what it used to be. I still defend it in the sense that I think it's great that it's there. I want it to continue. You know, no drama serial or soap stays exactly the same, does it?
And, no, it can't.
You know, everything evolves, doesn't it, over time? Yeah. And there are good points and bad points and good times and bad times and all the rest of it. But, you know, if they suddenly decided, because you both got, your characters have both still got connections in the show somewhere along the lines, you know, if you were to, you know, if there was some kind of, you know, cameo where they wanted you both back for some particular reason, would you go for it?
I think I probably would. I'm not sure, but I mean, I'm on the Emmerdale fan club on Facebook. People are always saying, would you go back if they asked you to?
Yeah.
And I usually say I think it's a bit too late now for me to go back. It's a long time ago.
I would. Yes, particularly because the Kim...
Yes.
There, you see, there's a link there.
Yeah, yeah.
And her character and mine were pretty close in the beginning, you know, that was... it would be interesting.
I was looking at a picture of you and the actress who plays Kim, and it was one of your first scenes today, I think. And your hairstyle, suddenly, going from the... When you first started, you had a particular... And then when you got to the late 80s, your hair got very much shorter. Was there a particular reason for that? Was that you doing that, or was that the TV people wanting you to do that? I know styles changed, but you just looked very different at that point.
I mean, part of it was I was always out on location and people used to laugh about I always had my hairbrush with me because my hair is so fine. And if I didn't, it would just blow, you know, like hay over my face, which isn't... to be acting, is it? And styles started to change, and so I had my hair shorter, and then it continued as shorter, and it was much easier. And we had early mornings, didn't we? As Freddie was saying, you know, it was quite.
Did the weather play havoc with your hair, Freddie?
I don't think it ever played havoc. I usually had a hat on anyway. Especially out in the country, working out in the countryside, I was in a hat on.
So finally, let's just think about some of the little... Obviously, we mentioned some of the characters. We can't mention them all. You know, people who spring to mind from the early years. I think we talked again in our individual interviews about Walter in the pub, you know, never spoke and all that kind of thing, which is quite funny. And, of course, you had, you had Stan Richards' character, who was great. You know, there's loads of people who came on board over time who've been fantastic characters in the show. But what about you two together in terms of your working life together? Any particular funny stories? Anything you remember about, you know, moments of, you know, between Matt and Dolly, that any moments when you corks together over something, or something was a bit of a, you know, anything you remember?
But I remember some of the offset things I remember, like when Jean was Princess Diana and I was Charles. and when we did, what did we do that?
We went down to for the benefit for Terry.
Yeah, it was a disabled unit, wasn't it? Pinderfield's.
Oh, Pinderfield's disabled unit, yes.
And then what was the show we did when
the
we all...
Halloween show, which I put on at Harrogate Theatre. Oh, no, that was to save the theatre, wasn't it? No, we did something at Pinderfield's out at Castle Howard. Were you in that one that I put together there?
I don't remember that. I was Dracula and you were...
No, that's the rocking Halloween show, which
That's right.
Put together, and which was based loosely around the Rocky Horror Show.
I had
all the cast doing "Let's Do the Time Warp Again," and I thought that you and Mark Curry and other members, male members of the cast, were going to end up in suspenders like the women were, and you all decided not to at the last minute when we did the time warp. And then, Freddie, you were Dracula and you sang "I'm in the Mood for Blood," simply because, and then Pat, who we were talking about, Pat Husband and Katie and I. Katie was at the piano, and the three of us were dressed as glamorous witches, and we sang "Three Little Maids Who All Unwary Come from the Local Cemetery."
I remember when you did a Victorian one at Four Pinderfields, and Stan Richards and I played Hinge and Bracket.
That's right, yes.
And then we called it Minge and Scratch It.
Yes.
Who were you? Who were you?
I was, which is the one that stands up and sings, and Stan Richards was at the piano, whichever way round it was.
Oh, Dame Hilda Bracket. Yeah, Bracket.
Dame Hilda.
Yeah.
I worked with Dame Hilda eventually in pantomime.
Yeah.
Aberdeen.
Yeah.
And Fraser was the master of ceremonies for the Rocking Halloween show, wasn't he? And then I got everybody in the audience to come and be part of a competition for the best sort of witch and warlock, and he gave prizes in the interval, which Richard Whiteley handed out.
Oh, good old twice nightly Whiteley.
Yes. Yeah, so in some ways we had more fun off the set than we did on the set. Especially with Gene organising us all into different charity shows and things.
Go on, Gene.
I was going to talk about Let's Feed the World, and I managed to get together the cast of Coronation Street and EastEnders, and we all met up. Do you remember we raised money for Feed the World?
If I was there, I might have left by then.
No, you had. No, you were there.
That was in the 80s, wasn't it? It'd be in the 80s, wouldn't it? Yeah, mid-80s, yeah.
Trouble is now I'm in my mid-80s, and something I remember very, very well from my childhood, but don't ask me what happened yesterday because it's gone out of my brain.
So drawing to a close then, 50 years on, first question, you know, all those other programmes have come and gone. Some have stayed. Obviously, Coronation Street's still there. EastEnders is still around, etc. Quite a few soaps have come and gone. You know, I think Emmerdale is now Emmerdale's the second longest. That's right. Probably comes the third is in 1974. I've got a friend of mine who's an actor in that. Are there any of the others that, you know, I know you're both in Crossroads, are there any others that you'd like to have starred in? Would you like to have done a bit of would you like to be in EastEnders, Jean?
Oh yes, why not? Born in London, come on, love.
What kind of character would you play? Would you want to play in EastEnders, do you think?
I don't know. I never. Sorry, my husband's in the background saying I should be in The Crown. Anyway, that's. No, it's funny. If you're an actor, it's not a question.
Doesn't matter, yeah. Yeah, you go for whatever. Yeah.
It's how it's written and whether you. I mean, I just loved Dolly. She was like a really special sister that I had care of and do right by. And I suppose that's why I was really upset with how quick her decision to have an abortion was. But you had to play it the way
they wanted it, yeah.
No, but I played it the way that...
I know what you mean. But you had to do it within their parameters. Yeah, yeah.
You have to work twice as hard. Freddie knows that. When you have a poor script... That's when you really have to work. When you have a fantastic script, and Michael Russell is a good script writer, somehow or other, the words just come naturally and then you just fill in with the reality, you know, and the truth.
Yeah. I remember saying that to Jo Kendall, because she used to grumble about the script. So I used to say, any actor can play a good script. If you've got a bad script, that's when you put your metal, you know, you've really got to make it work somehow. I remember saying to one director, I don't mind if they write Matt like a Swiss cottage solicitor, as long as you don't mind if I change it to a Yorkshire farmer.
Yes, that's right.
What about you, Freddie? Would you like to have starred in any of the others?
Yeah, I wouldn't have minded going into EastEnders. I find EastEnders a bit unreal because everybody would be effing and blinding in real life in EastEnders. Of course, they're not allowed to. But, I think I could have played something in that, couldn't I? I mean, I'm from a London family anyway. You know, heard my brother talking. You wouldn't think people say you're not like brothers at all. Because he's right, called Blimey Cockney.
Because of your EastEnders, you'd have to have some gangster link somewhere, wouldn't you? Because everyone's got a link to some kind of gangster in EastEnders, haven't they?
that'd be quite easy as well. Some parts of my family. I won't mention anybody, but
what did Emmerdale, looking back, I know Jean, you've been putting out on Twitter photographs of the time you were in Emmerdale, which is great to see all those photos. And things, which is great, fantastic. It obviously, you've both sat here chatting to me for quite a long time. You know, it obviously still has a place in your heart, doesn't it, Freddie? Oh,
definitely, yes, it does. Apart from the fact that I get a nice pension out of the money I put into a pension fund when I was doing it. But something like that, you're in it so many years, you can't forget it. I wake up sometimes having dreamt that I'd gone back into Emmerdale, as I do wake up sometimes dreamt I've gone back to the old Vic, which I was in before I went into Emmerdale for 4 years. So it's in your brain. You can't get it out. It's never going to leave you.
And of course, the other thing you've got out of it is lifelong friends as well.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, yes.
Sadly, some of them have left us now, but... Otherwise, we would have still been friends.
It was a happy time. It was a happy time.
Definitely.
That's why it was so sad when that kind of somebody came in who just hadn't got the sensitivity. It was only for a while, but hadn't got the sensitivity that everybody else had in some way towards the programme and the characters. We've got lots of lovely memories. Well, I certainly have lots of lovely memories.
Yeah, so have I, absolutely.
And such beautiful countryside. Bloody cold.
Yeah, especially with about 2 foot of snow on the ground.
Oh, and yes.
Trying to feed the sheep or whatever it was.
Lovely, beautiful. And it reminded me of the Sussex countryside because I was brought up in Sussex.
Downs and things, yeah.
Yeah, there's the sheep and the sweeping hills and little clumps of trees.
So that's what made it really, really different, the beginnings, all the countryside, farming and all that was way, way, way away from, you know, Coronation Street or EastEnders or any of those. It was very, very different. I think that's why people liked it.
So long may it continue, eh? 50 years.
Yes.
Amazing, really.
If it does another 50 years, I don't think I'll be here to see it.
This will.
We were talking about the theme tune. Let's hear your renditions of the theme tune. Can you hum it for us? Or sing it for us? Hum it for us. Go on, Gene.
Together or separately?
Do it separately first. Gene, the theme tune.
Tell me I was going to have to do that.
I've just come out with it in my head. Sorry. Let's hear you do the theme tune.
Oh, this is the right one. Da 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 da. And then I don't know how it goes.
Go on, Freddie. Go on, Freddie.
La 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 la. It's in my brain, you see.
Fantastic. And just a bit of extra, can you remember the how the Yorkshire TV jingle used to go before it started? Do you remember that bit?
Dun, 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 dun.
Well done. I'm sure you know this. You know what that was supposed to be? What that was supposed to be signifying? It's supposed to be duh, 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 is on Ilkley Moor Bartat.
Oh, good Lord. I never put the two together.
Yeah, there's actual theme that's even longer than that they used to play right at the very beginning of Yorkshire TV opening up for the day, and you'd see all the countryside and everything, and it would then merge into that sort of that jingle that became an iconic jingle for a long, long time, didn't it? Really.
Oh yeah. So what does Ilkley Moor Bartat mean?
Ilkley Moor. I don't actually. I'm a Yorkshireman. I should know, shouldn't I? Yeah. On Ilkley, well, yeah, without a hat, that's it. Yeah,
it's Ilkley Moor without your hat.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
Bartat.
Where has there been since I saw thee? That starts off with, isn't it?
Yeah. Where has there been since I saw thee?
On Ilkley Moor, Bartat. I think that's enough of our singing for today.
And then later on, which is weird, it's a strange song because it goes on about. It's all about death, isn't it? It's all about eating. You've been eaten up by the worms. Or
yes, the worms will eat you up. Yes.
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember that Alan Bennett story when I think it was his sister, her husband died and he was cremated. And she said to Alan Bennett, will you drive me out to Ilkley Moor? Because I want to scatter his ashes on Ilkley Moor. And it was quite a windy day. And when she got back in the car, some of the ashes were stuck to her coat. And apparently she said to Alan Bennett, you see, you didn't want to leave me. Typical Alan Bennett story.
Happy birthday to Emmerdale then. Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Happy birthday, Emmerdale. Here's to another 50 years. If you can do it, do it.
Brilliant. Thanks, Gene. Thanks, Freddie. That's brilliant. Thank you.
Gene Rogers and Freddie Pine talking to Ashley. And there's plenty of Emmerdale treats on the Distinct Nostalgia feed. Scroll down and you'll find loads.
Distinct Nostalgia. More than a podcast.